State Rep. Janet Adkins under fire for comments she made about Congresswoman Corrine Brown. Mayor Curry and JEA are at loggerheads, and JU is out with new poll numbers on the GOP presidential field. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. The show's always live at 9, and now subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, don't miss our look at the new local documentary, Six Words. Plus, the music and the message of this weekend's Clean Water Music Fest. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday, and that means it's time for our weekly roundtable here today. Tim Gibbons, editor at the Jacksonville Business Journal. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
A.G. Gankarski, writer at Florida Politics, joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Claire Goforth with Folio Weekly.
Always a pleasure.
Good to have all of you here in studio. And there is so much news to discuss this week. Lots of hot stories from JU's new presidential poll, the first statewide poll JU's ever put in the field, to a major dust-up between Mayor Curry and JEA. We'll tell you about that later. But first this morning, our top story of the week, State Representative Janet Adkins in the hot seat. Now, Adkins thought she was speaking privately to fellow Republican activists when she met with them in a closed-door strategy session and discussed the new east-west configuration for U.S. Representative Corrine Brown's district. Someone recorded audio of Adkins discussing whether the number of inmates within the district's new boundaries might affect the outcome of an election. Adkins told the North Florida Republican Caucus that putting a large number of prisoners in the black voting age population of Brown's district would be, quote, a perfect storm to make sure that Corrine Brown wouldn't get reelected. Take a listen.
The Supreme Court has required that we reduce and avoid packing minorities within congressional districts. So now we've gone from 60%, whatever it was, now to 45%, whatever the new number is. But we've reduced it, right? We do not take into consideration where those people live. It would not be constitutional to take into consideration where they live. But what we anticipate and what the Democrats were arguing on the House floor is we should be taking out people who live in prisons, and we should not be including them and drawing them into the district. They're part of the population.
Can they vote?
No, they can't vote. So when you take a look at, and I don't know what the numbers are, but you take a look at how many minorities are in the prisons within that newly drawn proposed congressional five, how many of them live in the prisons. That's why Corrine Brown is so against having an east-west, because her concern is that they live in prisons and they can't vote.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect storm. It's a perfect storm.
Representative Adkins has since apologized for these remarks. Congresswoman Corrine Brown has also issued a statement about this. We'll discuss that in a moment. And we want your calls on this. Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. A.G. Gankarski, let's begin with you. People have called in to our news department and said, well, what is Janet Adkins saying that is any different from what Corrine Brown has said about this?
That's exactly the point. It is exactly what Corrine Brown's been saying. They were diminishing of the district, putting people who were in prisons, living in prisons, as Janet Adkins kept saying. Just chilling. It's a subdivision. And counting them as part of the voting age population when, in fact, they cannot vote. And that's the crux of the issue. And, you know, honestly, they have validated Corrine Brown's position. They have allowed her to prove malicious intent. And Corrine Brown basically has the basis for any legal challenge she wants to make on, you know, remapping the district. So, you know, Janet Adkins did the Florida Democratic Party and Corrine Brown a big favor.
Here's the statement from Representative Adkins telling the Times Union, my comments regarding the proposed realignment of Congressional District 5 as recommended by the Florida Supreme Court were an attempt to explain some of the issues that came up in debate during the redistricting special session. I apologize if my statements offended anyone. Because congressional redistricting is a pending legal issue, I will not comment on this matter any further. Claire Forth.
You know, I think she just wants to avoid talking about this if possible, but this issue isn't really going to go away. It really is just evidence of what we've all suspected or known all along, that the redistricting process has been completely just corrupted by a blatant desire to create partisan power by the Republican Party.
Tim Gibbons.
It is interesting, as AG said, that this is basically the same thing that, Corinna said, that if you take Janet Atkins' comments and like you cut off the first bit of it where she basically says this is what we want to do and she's simply describing it, it actually doesn't, you know, it's not offensive. It's simply a description of, yeah, this is what's going to happen. And it's clearly, you know, it's a strategy.
We want your calls on this at 549-2937. Here's the statement from Congresswoman Brown, released through her attorney. I've been saying from the outset that the newly proposed boundaries of District 5 make it a non-performing district, not only for an African-American, but for a member of the Democratic Party. Clearly, those who drew up the map knew that the new congressional district has 18 prisons in it. And they also know that in the state of Florida, felons cannot vote. So not only was the black voting age population decreased from 50% to 45%, many who were counted in this 45% are incapable of voting. So the number is in reality nowhere near 45%. What about that? A.G. Gankurski, Corrine Brown is saying that redrawing this district makes it impossible for her to win re-election. Not everyone agrees with that, however.
Well, no. I mean, not everybody agrees with it, but, you know, the fact is that the true count of actual voters in that district is unknown. There are estimates. Nobody has a specific number when it comes down to it. And, you know, it really took all of this for Corrine Brown's position to get heard because, you know, media outlet after media outlet, when she was making her case in the last couple of months, have basically diminished what she's saying. And, you know, you get a lot of that in the media. Corrine Brown doesn't really get heard, doesn't really get listened to, gets framed adversely. And, you know, it really took Janet Atkins being recorded by Mark Caputo at Politico to basically bring it out. And when Janet Atkins was asked questions yesterday about, well, why can't you be more as forthcoming with the media and with the public as you were in a private meeting, she was unwilling to answer them.
The thing is, though, I mean, I don't disagree with any of that, but there is a certain amount of this is not, Corrine Brown's district is not the best poster child, you know, for saying, well, this is how it should be. I mean, her district is known as being a gerrymandered, you know, stretching from, you know, here to forever sort of thing.
But her case has been that her district is linked by geographical representation, like the urban populations of Jacksonville and Orlando.
But also the idea is redistricting is not supposed to help Corrine Brown get reelected. It's supposed to have minority representation, yes, but you know, even when we talk about her district, it's not her district. If she loses, that's not a bad thing necessarily, as long as there is representation for everyone.
Well, if this district goes east-west, she's going to be up against Al Lawson in the Democratic primary. He's a two-time loser for the CD2 race, and he's somebody that the media is building up as a very popular state senator, et cetera, a former state senator. And if Al Lawson gets elected, it might as well be Al Letson for one thing, because you know, nobody knows who he is in Jacksonville. Second thing, you know, is what
we're
is
talking about. An African-American Democrat, Al
yes,
Lawson,
we are,
of Gainesville.
Right. No, he's of Tallahassee.
Tallahassee,
that's
sorry.
My point.
Although,
yeah,
actually, Al
right.
Lawson getting elected would be awesome.
But this is the thing, though. It's like, what does somebody from Tallahassee know about Jacksonville's interest?
Well, what does somebody from Jacksonville know about Orlando's interest, though? I mean, Corrine Brown's district, you know, it's not like it's a compact thing now.
Claire, go forth.
You're right. It's definitely not a compact district. I mean, I would really like to see this process be possibly taken away from the legislature. I just don't feel at this point we can trust them to create these contiguous districts that are representative of the voters.
Now, let me quote your piece, AG, from Florida Politics, where you kind of get to the difficult nub of this. You wrote, think of it, Atkins essentially said that the district was including prisoners on purpose to subvert the very idea of a minority access district. Conveniently, the biggest pushers of disenfranchising felons are Republicans. To strip away their rights as citizens and then to add their bodies to the roll being counted for apportionment purposes is a noxious sleight of hand that sounds like nothing so much as a 21st century version of the Three-Fifths Compromise. That meant counting slaves as three-fifths of a person, in its cynical subversion of the very concept of citizenship. Those are pretty strong words against the Republican Party. You're a conservative, so you stand by those words?
Absolutely. I mean, put them in print. I put them in print yesterday, so there's not really a lot of time to walk them back. But, you know, if you look at it, if you look at the prison industrial complex, I mean, the fact that Atkins you know, on this recording, talked about prisons being the biggest industry in this area. This, you know, east-west district that's being drawn is so economically depressed that, you know, basically for people to get jobs out there, they work as prison guards or prison transport or whatever. It is an indictment of, you know, failed policies for rural North Florida. And, you know, the fact is that, you know, if we look at our prison complex, we look at our police state, we look at all of these things, you know, it's a convergence and it's something that we need to have a conversation about because it's benefiting a few people and it's basically creating a permanent underclass that goes from prison out and back again.
Do you feel that both major parties are failing to address these systemic issues?
Absolutely. And really, the irony is one of the few politicians in our area who does so is Corrine Brown. And, you know, she never gets heard doing it. And most of her positions don't really get heard because we're too busy, you know, with caricatures or memes or quoting something she might have said 15 or 20 years ago. And there's a real double standard when it comes to Corrine Brown coverage.
I do find it interesting that Bernie Sanders has actually brought up the private prison issue. Do I think it will gain traction in the election? Probably not. But, you know, coming from an area of Pennsylvania where you had judges sent to prison because they were taking bribes to send kids to prison, you know, for money-making corporations, there is an issue there of, you know, AG's phrase, the prison industrial complex that does warp our political
But landscape. Then every time a politician comes out and is tough on crime, we compliment them and we say, good job. But the reality is every time that happens, it really just furthers this schools-to-prison pipeline and, you know, exacerbates the issue.
Let's go to your calls right now, 549-2937. Dennis is in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Dennis. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. The root of all of our political corrupt system right now is the gerrymandered districts, and the only solution is to completely take it out of the hands of the politicians and put it into a nonpartisan commission so that they can straighten out this mess and get districts that are uniform, conform to the communities they serve, and take care of the legislative issues, you know, that the people need to have discussed in their area. These gerrymandered districts like Corrine's or so many others across the state, it's the only solution to try to even start to clean the mess up is to get rid of the gerrymandered districts and allow an independent commission to establish.
Thank you, Dennis. Senator Bill Nelson the other day came out and said Florida needs an independent redistricting commission. Some states have gone to that. AG, that's a long and difficult political process.
Yes, and it raises a question of who exactly is independent. When people have that level of interest, that level of stake in the game, you know, they're not politically independent. They're driven by one motivation or another. And you know, you scratch the surface of an independent commission, you find political partisans.
Right. It's difficult to have a truly independent process.
Right. I mean, I know this show does not celebrate cynicism at all, but the idea that that you would get people who want to put the time and effort into doing a, you know, fairly arcane thing, and they have no interest in the outcome. You know, the only thing I could see it working is you know, get an independent commission from like Wisconsin, and they do Florida, and Florida does Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And, that's how we used to judge the Emmys
exactly,
in TV.
Right.
We had to judge like the Emmys for Kansas, yeah. And you know, things like that. Here's an email here's an email from Christopher. Adkins sounds like a sure thing for a local board since she and the mayor share the same values. We want your calls and comments. That brings us to another headline from the week. Mayor Curry and the Jacksonville City Council passing a new budget that includes dozens of new police officers. At the same time, conflict has escalated between Curry's office and JEA's board of directors. JEA board vice chair Peter Bauer stepped down Thursday, saying the atmosphere for public service has become, in his words, quote, poisonous and detrimental. Now, Curry had asked for Bauer's resignation after a Times Union investigative report found that JEA board members were given highly scripted talking points in advance of their publicly noticed meetings. These talking points had to do with their discussion of CEO Paul McElroy's performance, whether to give him a raise, and other sensitive matters. Let's go to your calls in a moment on this at 549-2937, AG Gankarski.
Well, you know, Peter Bauer basically took the bait. you know, he basically was trying to talk his way off the board a year and a half ago when, you know, Ronnie Belton was trying to get him to back the Mayor Brown's JEA pension plan. Bauer refused. He went to the Times Union and said, I'm not going to be a puppet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And counsel stood by Bauer. This time around, Bauer wanted legal representation with him in a meeting with Jordan Ellsbury from the Curry administration, and Mayor Curry and senior staff. Ellsbury balked, basically demanded a resignation, and, you know, Bauer submitted it. And really, with all of these, you know, Bauer and Lisa Strange Weatherby, who accused Curry of a paranoia-induced purge, what is happening is that with each ill-advised statement these people make, they basically are solidifying the counsel around Curry's position, which is he has the right to pick, you know, who goes on these boards. You know, so, I mean, that's really the thing. People aren't playing the politics smart on this. People are setting their traps, and they are exposing their business, and it's making Lenny Curry, you know, have a political stroke he might not otherwise have.
It surprised me when Bauer actually, you know, basically came out and put himself in a bad position when, to some extent, the wind, I think, was blowing at least slightly toward the idea of the mayor's action toward the independent authorities was somewhat of an overreach. You know, legal, fine, but not the typical done thing. Now, when you have people basically setting themselves up to be to leave, it changes that conversation.
Especially with the JEA agreement in play right now. You want people on the board who are sympathetic to the city's position. Sam Moussa and Mayor Curry have both talked about getting these boards and commissions in line. JEA board, ground zero for that.
Claire.
Right, and Boyer, when he wrote in his email his concerns about it, the agency becoming a piggy bank to be raided for political expediency, the reality is that JEA contributes something like 20-some percent of the city budget, which is far and away above what other municipal utilities contribute to their city budgets. So in this, you know, this whole JEA mayor standoff going on, it's looking like another power play to get control of this.
And unlike some of the other ones where it seems to be purely political motivated, this one actually has true money at stake. And that makes it a bigger win for the administration if they can basically get the people they want on the board.
Let's go to your calls, 549-2937. Scott in Arlington. Hi, Scott. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to comment on your recent conversation regarding Corrine Brown. And I'm a conservative Republican, and yes, I believe she is an embarrassment to Northeast Florida. However, you cannot deny that she has brought a lot of bacon home to Northeast Florida, and I'm a huge fan of Andrew Crenshaw and what he's done for the Navy. I'm a Navy veteran, but I don't know who else can bring the bacon home like Corrine can.
Scott, thanks for the call. AG.
And that's what happens. Corrine delivers. She's been there almost a quarter century. She knows how the game works. She knows how it's played. She knows how to get the apportionment. She knows how to work with Republicans on issues like the ports and the bases and so on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when people, you know, I take issue with the statement that Corrine Brown's an embarrassment to Florida. She's not an embarrassment to Florida, Northeast Florida, et cetera. What she is a very successful politician mm-hmm. who can go into any situation and basically change the game.
Well, we saw that recently in terms of there's a proposal on the table to redo the Duval County Public mm-hmm. Schools, and Nico Lavitie, the new superintendent, is trying very hard to make some changes within the school system to stop parents pulling their kids out of the public schools. Most of the changes involve schools in the urban core. That's ruffling a lot of feathers. And there are sound reasons behind those proposed changes, but it's upsetting to a lot of people. Corrine Brown had walked into a school board workshop and said, no, you're not going to do that, and I will sue if you try. And it was a remarkable display of power, frankly, and that's going to be an interesting dynamic that we watch play out.
It is interesting how, you know, people were upset, and then when she took action, it suddenly focused that and the conversation changed. I think AG was at that meeting, actually.
Yes, I was. And the way she played it was masterful. She basically walked in, sat down, she, you know, said her piece, and then flies back to D.C. And, you know, Superintendent Vitti, you know, fulminated and fumed after that. But it didn't matter because Corrine Brown made her statement and it basically delayed the plans that they're trying to push through.
She is the voice for, I mean, a powerful voice for, you know, I was going to say a certain section of the community, but really for, you know, a swath of the community.
Yes.
And the number to join us is 549-2937. We want your thoughts on all the biggest stories of the week. We want to talk for a minute about some new numbers in the presidential race. Now, these come courtesy of Jacksonville University's Public Policy Institute. They've got a new poll out looking at the 2016 presidential race. This is their first statewide poll that they've done on anything like this. So kudos to them. Now, according to JU, in Florida, Donald Trump still leads among likely Republican voters, but Jeb Bush is a very close second, followed by Carly Fiorina, Ben Carson, and Senator Marco Rubio. We also learned this week that JU will not get the chance to host a presidential or vice presidential debate. Sadly, they were in the running, but they didn't make the final cut. The numbers are Trump in Florida with 24%, followed by Bush at about 17%. Then it's Fiorina, Carson, and Rubio. That's among likely GOP voters in Florida. Those are the top five. Tim Gibbons.
Just before we get into the poll numbers, that debate hosting thing is interesting. From people I've talked to, they've actually been encouraged to apply again to make some changes to the physical facility. And you know, we're talking 4 years from now, but actually try again to do this. And they were the only state in Florida even, I'm sorry, the only school in Florida even on the short list. So, you know, that does say something about them. This race hasn't gotten any less interesting. It will be fun to see how it changes once kind of the silly season is done. But I don't know. It can't be fun being Jeb Bush right now.
Claire, go for it.
No, definitely not. Nor Marco Rubio. Shouldn't he be leading
in
his home state?
Bush and Rubio not leading in their home state. Yeah. Neither one.
But it is interesting that Trump is leading. I think that people are a little bit tired of the same old from leadership, and Trump definitely gives them an alternative to that. I don't think that he's viable in the national election, though. So, I mean, if he keeps polling very, very well.
I don't know. A Trump-Sanders race, that would be the awesome.
Trump Sanders. I can't see that. My dream race.
That would be
a
very interesting general election.
It would be great for TV ratings.
Yeah.
It really would. But I'd like to see Trump Palin personally.
Well, you know, here's the thing with Donald Trump is, you know, he's stuck at around 24-25%. You're seeing these four people basically tied behind him in this JU poll. And you're seeing an attrition of a lot of these candidates who are dropping out. You know, I'm hearing Rand Paul is going to be soon. Pataki is going to be soon. These 1%, 2%, 3% guys are dropping out. And the question is, where do those voters go? If they go toward Bush and Rubio and sort of the, you know, the establishment candidates in this paradigm, you know, that's good news for them. But, you know, did they go to Trump, Fiorina, Carson? All these guys are outsiders. They're not beholden to the establishment. So, you know, really it's going to be interesting to see how these candidates in the top five calibrate their messages going forward.
Fiorina's interesting, you know, somebody who spends his life covering business, where she's not somebody who I think has gotten the scrutiny just because
she's going to.
And if you read the business coverage of her time at HP, it was dismal.
It was withering.
You know,
but could you see, though, the GOP putting her up as a VP candidate? I could easily see that.
It depends on who they're trying to you know, appeal to. I could see Carson actually making more sense if you're looking
for
an outsider. Well, if you're looking for an outsider sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, what state does she carry? She's from California, but you know, she got hammered in a California election. So you want somebody at VP who delivers electoral votes.
When you look at the Mitt Romney thing of, you know, the business candidate sounds really good for Republicans, but can have trouble connecting with, you know, the rest of the country sort of thing. But at least Romney could point to successes in business. Fiorina doesn't do that.
There's no Barack Obama on the other side either this time.
Not yet. And, you know, I'm wondering, the Democratic Party, they're campaigning for the presidential election, but they're being rather quiet. They're not having debates yet that I've seen. You know, who in the Republican Party is going to have the stamina to keep on this year and a half long campaign?
Jeb Bush has the money and the network and
he's
the resources.
Low energy.
Yes.
Well, but you know what? I mean, the Bush family's been in this business a really long time. I think that can't be discounted.
No, experience is helpful.
Experience,
and
contacts,
you said network
resources,
and money.
Yeah. Network money. Here's a tweet from Nicole. First ever state poll from JU. That's impressive for this community. JU will land the debate next time around. Thanks for that tweet, Nicole. 549-2937. Barbara is calling in from the Florida Georgia line. That's a band, by the way. Hey, Barbara, good morning.
Oh, good morning. I just wanted to make one brief little comment of an idea I had a long time ago about the gerrymandering situation and redrawing the voting districts. And I had thought that whatever grade, and I think it's seventh grade, that takes civics classes, that the concerned politicians would draw up a short list, maybe three or four or five items that they would want to make sure was included as the parameters for drawing up the districts, and then allow public school students in seventh grade or a civics class to go and come up with a plan to draw the districts and put the boundaries up for the districts, considering the things that have already been identified by political parties as things they wanted to include. And that school would win a huge grant from the state, which could, of course, be taken from the salary of people who were previously paid to do this and simply can't get it done well. And it, using children to do it, or young people to do it, would, number one, make them more aware of the political concerns of their areas. But number two, would make it simple and understandable by
Thanks, Barbara.
Can you imagine the lobbying?
You know what? I think given this, the disgust many have with the way it's been done up to this point, I think a lot of people think high school students would probably do a better job.
Well, these are seventh graders, so.
it's state of innocence and everything. They
haven't been corrupted yet by the process.
I'm just picturing somebody sitting outside of school with, you know, I don't know, what are kids like today? You know, a bunch of video game cartridges.
There are some bright civic students out there. I'm not kidding. That's a good idea. Mike in Springfield. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I just want to talk about the nomination for a second. Yeah, Republicans haven't picked anyone but the perennial front runner since before Eisenhower. So I think Jeb Bush is a shoo-in as far as the nominee, despite where things are. And I appreciate the speaker talking about the electoral math that still matters, that puts Kasich as the VP candidate because Ohio and Florida, as you're 1 and 2, that's a tough electoral map for Democrats to go against, just straight on math. And I'll tell you, as much as we want these races to not come down to this, those big states are what carry the presidential races still. So just wanted to hear some talk about that because I don't think people talk a lot about Kasich bringing Ohio to the table.
Excellent point, Mike. Mike in Springfield, excellent point.
Yeah, I mean, I think we actually talked about Kasich a few weeks back on the show. And yeah, I mean, an Ohio moderate Republican who actually sounds good in vice presidential debates, who doesn't alienate people. I mean, that's somebody you want on the ticket, or at least on the short list of consideration, depending on how the rest of it goes.
Right. So he strikes me as far too moderate to actually be the presidential nominee, but bringing that moderate voice in onto the ticket could be valuable.
He's not going to say anything ridiculous. He's not going to commit gaffes.
And he's from Ohio.
Yeah. And, you know, you see a lot of these guys stepping in landmines every day.
Ira on the South Side. Hi, Ira.
Thank you very much. Great show, Melissa.
Thank you.
For your panel, I've always thought that congressional districts should be drawn strictly on county lines. And if we anchored all the Florida U.S. representatives in a major city and then anchored them with adjoining contiguous counties in order to give clear boundaries and clear representation, it would make it a lot simpler and fairer. Any comments from your panel?
Go ahead, Claire.
Well, I don't know that would actually be possible because of the size of some of the cities and the requirements for populations in these congressional districts, although I do think that is a very good idea and a starting point.
There's a representation system. I can't remember the exact political science term for it, but where you basically don't have – you have districts, but you vote on a statewide basis. So basically you end up with a – you don't have to worry as much about minority access, or you know, you're basically taking a wider view of the voting population.
Well, you've got to worry about minority access. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 says you do. And you know, another issue with the sort of take the snow globe, shake it up, and you know, give us a bunch of new representatives is we lose seniority in committees. You know, somebody like Corrine Brown's been there 22 years. Therefore, you know, she's the ranking member on the committee she's on. And you know, if you put in a bunch of new people, you lose that. You're going to lose resources. You're going to lose jobs coming to Florida. You're going to lose industries. There are unforeseen consequences to this that go beyond, well, we don't like the map.
What about the other side of that argument, though, that the Congress is ossified? that you do occasionally need new faces.
Yeah, but so Florida so Jacksonville takes the bullet on that. I mean, the idea of if you wanted to say, okay, guess what, we're going to start all over next time and just, you know, term limit everybody out and you have to start over.
Right.
That would be, you know, weird, but at least it would be everybody doing it. But instead, it's just Northeast Florida losing seniority becomes an issue.
Linda in Deerwood. Go ahead, Linda.
Yes. I like to piggyback kind of like on what AG just said about we hate our Congress people unless they're our Congress people. I am just a little perturbed by Ms. Atkins, who I know she's in Fernandina, and that's kind of like in our geographic area, but I don't hear a lot of people other than her, you know, filing legislation and getting involved. And I'm glad that she wanted to explain to those individuals how they were really packing that area. Why is that her concern? She needs to worry about representing the people in her district. Unless she plans to run for that seat or another seat in the future, maybe. I just think that the whole tenor of the Republican Party, from Ben Carson, who I used to love, but sometimes you love people until you know how biased they are. I just think between Donald Trump, Ben Carson, and Jen Atkins talking about black people in prisons that isn't even in her district, it just paints such a horrible picture. And they obviously didn't listen to Pope Francis, who talked about us getting together and taking care of one another. But I guess the game of politics takes precedent over everything else. Thanks, guys. Have a good Friday.
Thank you, Linda.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the point. I mean, Janet Atkins, you know, taking a position against Corrine Brown is interesting, but really her next move is Nassau County Superintendent.
Right.
You know, she's got the fundraising in that race. She's got key endorsements. And, you know, this is kind of a thing that if I were running against Janet Atkins as Nassau County Superintendent, I'd be reaching out to media today. I'd be scheduling interviews. I'd be putting out statements. I would make this a wedge issue because for, you know, one of these candidates doesn't have the money she does or the profile, this is their one shot. They need to exploit it.
But are you trying to say that she's alone in this, that this she's the only Republican that is
No, she's the one who actually said it.
She's the one who got recorded saying it.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If you get recorded saying it, you're on the hook.
But I think that part of the tenor of the comments almost seemed to be just a, let me explain to you how the world works, and talking to her audience and, you know, yes, this is, people in the know this sort of thing. Her tone of voice wasn't even a, like she was dropping a bombshell so much as a, yeah, come on, everyone knows this. I think you're right. It could be a wedge issue, but it's not like it sounds like it's a deeply held position of hers so much as a, you know, a statement of fact.
Well, I would exploit it because she's not willing to answer to it. She's not willing to talk about it in any meaningful way except in, you know, sort of passive voice sound bites and media releases.
Someday I will understand why politicians who do stuff like this then think that by not talking about it, the story will go away, as opposed to it's going to keep on coming, just, you know.
Preach.
Well, for the meantime, we are going to put it away because we have to talk about the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week. Luckily, around the state, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now. Only in Florida. Now, only in Florida are raccoons so smart that they knock on people's doors for hours until people finally break down and give them food. Down in Sarasota, a friendly neighborhood raccoon has learned to knock on a sliding glass door with a rock every single time it's hungry. Local station WFLA captured the animal's trick on video. Homeowner Susie Chin named the coon Roxy. Apparently, Roxy has a taste for cat food and has been visiting the Chin house every day for 9 months straight. She knocks for hours until Susie Chin finally gives up and hands over some eats.
Next, she's going to have a tree come up and say, I am Groot.
Only in Florida do thieves try to pawn off their stolen goods at the same store they just stole from. Ocala police say 38-year-old Jose Claudio Jr. took an amp from a pawn shop on Monday, ripped off the sale tags, and then pawned the same stolen item back to the same store the next day. Sadly, this points to much deeper issues here in the state of Florida because Claudio was pawning the item to pay for his untreated heroin addiction.
Well, good luck getting that in jail.
Finally, only in Florida do people make jokes so bad it gets them banned from Disney World for life. St. Augustine resident David Swindler and his family are huge Disney fans. In fact, his wife's nickname is Tinkerbell, and she calls her husband Grumpy. But a recent goof got his room at a Disney resort raided in the middle of the night. The family was booted from the hotel, and they even got a lifetime ban. Swindler and the family were staying at the Pop Century Resort over Labor Day, and they had booked a two-night stay. He told First Coast News that when he grew impatient with an employee or cast member, he joked that he could build a meth lab in his room by the time he could finally get some service.
It's Breaking Bad now.
As you might imagine, the joke didn't go over very well. Little did he know that the goof he thought was so innocuous would trigger a middle-of-the-night raid by Orange County Sheriff's deputies and Disney security. Even after finding no meth, authorities evicted Swindler from the resort forever.
The true only in Florida bit is that he knew how long it took to build a meth lab.
Exactly. But it's sad. They're huge Disney freaks, and they are now banned for life.
Disney freaks? Is that really a phrase you want to use?
Thanks to our media panel, Tim Gibbons, Claire Goforth, and A.G. Gankarski. As always, wonderful to see you guys. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Later in the hour, a look ahead to this weekend's Clean Water Music Fest. But up next, examining the fight over Jacksonville's HRO through the new documentary, Six Words.
WJCT and Community First Credit Union are dedicated to improving our community by empowering one of our most valuable resources, our teachers. Here's what some local teachers had to say about our fourth annual Teach Conference.
It's been wonderful. I love the keynote speakers. Both of them were incredible.
I think I've only missed 1 year since they've had it. And every year I always use, learn something that I can take back to the teachers at my school to utilize in their programs to make our program better.
It just really kind of gives us some energy to go back into the battlefield and do what we need to do for these kids.
Every one of us are going to leave here with something positive and useful for our classrooms.
Major funding for the Teach Conference is made possible by CSX Transportation, the Florida Lottery, and the Jacksonville Public Education Fund. To learn more about how WJCT assists parents, caregivers, and educators to help kids succeed, visit wjct.org/education.
Welcome back. Well, our First Coast Connect Book Club returns next month with a look at writer David McCullough's latest biography. This one's about the life of the Wright brothers. We want to hear your thoughts about the book. You can check it out at the Jacksonville Public Library. They're our partner in our book club. Or buy the book at Chamberlain's or the Bookmine. They're also our partners in the First Coast Connect Book Club. Just send us your comments about the book to bookclub@wjct.org. Well, after Jacksonville's unsuccessful attempt to pass an updated human rights ordinance back in 2012, award-winning documentary filmmaker Bill Rutherford began work on a new film looking at the issue. It's called Six Words, and there's a free screening Sunday at the Sunray Cinema in Five Points. Bill Rutherford and Dan Merkin of the Jacksonville Coalition for Equality are here now to tell us about it. Hey, guys, good morning.
Good morning.
Bill, let's start with you. This film is called Six Words, and that refers to the language that would have updated the human rights ordinance. Is that right?
That's correct, Melissa. Six Words is not only the name of the documentary, it also refers to the phrase sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression. Those are the six words not currently in Jacksonville's HRO, the Human Rights Ordinance, or non-discrimination laws. And basically it means that in Jacksonville, you can be fired from your job just for being gay or lesbian or transgender. You can be denied housing. You can be turned away from a restaurant, a movie theater, a store, just because you're gay, lesbian, or transgender. You have no recourse, no lawsuit to file, no government agency to help you. What I find remarkable is that right now, Jacksonville is the largest city in the country, the largest city in the U.S., that has not passed some sort of protection for its gay residents. And the documentary explores how we got to this unique place and where we might go from here.
And you've spent Bill has spent 3 years working on this film, Dan. The Coalition for Equality will be part of this event, a screening on Sunday, but also sort of a discussion, right?
Yeah, that's right. Sunray event is going to have a panel afterwards, and there's going to be some discussion around the film itself, and then also about, the current state of Jacksonville and why we don't have these protections and what people can do to add them. I do want to make a little update, though. We already have sold out the Sunray event.
Oh, it's sold out.
So as far as we know, there are no more tickets available, but we do have another screening now at UNF, which will be on Tuesday at 7 o'clock. And there are tickets still available for that one, and that will have a panel as well.
What would you say to people listening that they might not be able to come out to the screening? They've been following the issue. This was a divisive issue in Jacksonville. It of course, failed by one vote on the city council in 2012, 10-9. Not everyone is on the same page in Jacksonville on this issue. Some might say, well, why do we need to update this ordinance? Why does this matter?
You know, I interviewed many of the city's business leaders for the documentary, corporate CEOs, people with the Jack's Chamber, local movers and shakers, so to speak. They all said the same thing, that it is so much harder to sell Jacksonville, to bring in new business, new investment, new talent, with the current non-inclusive HRO glued in place. One example, a progressive CEO may not want to bring his or her company here because of the non-inclusion in the ordinance. How do you explain to your gay employees that you're considering moving them to a place where they are not considered full and equal citizens? I have been told that to some CEOs, this is a deal breaker.
Have you invited local members of the city council, the mayor's office, and so forth to these screenings?
Actually, the panel on Sunray is going to include Jim Love, Councilman Jim Love, and it's moderated by Wayne Wood. We also have Natisha Stevens there from the ACLU, and Bill will be there. So it should be a pretty good discussion.
Now, making a documentary is a heavy lift. I know this from my own experience. 3 years in the making, is that right?
It took a while.
Yeah. Who all's interviewed in this film?
Oh, my goodness. John Delaney. We have Jimmy Midyet, who is with the Jacksonville Coalition for Equality. Audrey Moran, the incoming Jacksonville Chair 2016. Some religious leaders on both sides. And as you can guess, there's quite a bit of controversy over this. I interviewed many Bible scholars. Some of them say they are opposed to the six words because there are half a dozen or so Bible verses that say homosexuality is a sin, and therefore by extrapolation, being gay is a choice, and you do not deserve these protections. We have other ministers and rabbis on the documentary who say, wait a minute, that's not true, you're misinterpreting those verses. So it's quite a controversy.
Absolutely. So the Sunray screening is sold out, but if people listening right now want to come to another screening, it'll be Tuesday night, UNF. Where can people come?
It'll be at the Student Union Center at 7. The tickets are free, but we do require people to get a ticket. So they can do that by visiting our website, which is jaxequality.org, jaxequality.org. And right in the breaking news, you can click on that and people can reserve a ticket.
Two screenings coming up for Six Words. And thanks so much, filmmaker Bill Rutherford and Dan Merkin with the Jack's Coalition for Equality. Thanks for being here, and I'm sure it'll be two very interesting events.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Back in a moment.
They make you think that it's your idea. Work nights, weekends, holidays, through your son's baseball game, through your daughter's wedding, so maybe, just maybe, you can get the big prize. Well, this week on Snap, we played a little game. The Brass Ring. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Relax Radio is the Great American Songbook, oldies and light jazz.
The thing that's cool for me is that it feels like it's the music of my life.
Relax Radio is the station you can listen to all day on your HD radio. Make a $120 gift to WJCT and you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's a celebration of music and fun, all for a great cause. The fourth annual Clean Water Music Fest is coming up tomorrow out at the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall with lots of great local bands and more. We've got a preview right now as we welcome Jordan Jackson and Sean Fisher of the local duo Flagship Romance. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good to see you. And you founded the Clean Water Music Fest. It's gotten bigger and better every year. Jordan, this is music and fun, all with the intent to help bring clean water to people around the world.
Yes, yes. We benefit the organization Charity Water out of New York City, and they are helping give clean water to some of the 663 million people around the world without it.
So tell us about the event, Sean. This is tomorrow. You will be performing, you and Jordan. Your band is Flagship Romance, but lots of bands.
Right. We have 18 bands on two stages. It's a family-friendly event all day. Tickets are free with a donation, and 100% of the proceeds go directly to providing clean, safe drinking water.
And it's a festival, so we're talking lots of food, stuff for kids to do, the whole thing.
Yeah, we have a bounce house for the kids. We have amazing food trucks. We have a vendor's market with some of the best North Florida vendors. We have an intuition beer garden for the adults.
Very nice.
And a great silent auction. We have over 100 items, and they are amazing.
Now, how did you come upon this idea, and why is clean water? You're a couple in real life, and you're involved in music together, but you're involved in activism together. Why is clean water your cause?
Well, for the two of us, I mean, we're singers. Mm-hmm. We drink a gallon of water each a day. Uh-huh. We cannot imagine having to walk hours upon hours to fetch water that is dirty, that's going to make us sick, that if we had kids, it might kill our children, you know? And so for us, as musicians, as artists, we wanted to use our platform to make a bigger difference. We wanted to have fun while doing it and show the community how easy it is to do something about something that you're passionate about.
It's hard for us here in the United States to understand the depth of the crisis in other countries, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, we just go to the faucet anytime we want, and you know, it's just a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm. So how will you funnel the funds from Clean Water Music Fest? How will Charity Water use the funds raised?
Well, we won't know exactly where they're going until January, but they benefit communities all over in Central America, Central Africa, Rwanda, Asia, everywhere. And it's really just, we're so excited to see where they go this year.
And they have a revolutionary model. When they started, they have two separate bank accounts, one for private donations and one for public sector donations. And no matter what, 100% of every donation goes to the cause.
We're getting a call about this. We'll take it in a moment. Tell us a little bit in the meantime about Flagship Romance. You guys recorded a new album a while back. How's the music career going?
It's going wonderful. We actually just got back a week ago from our 65-date honeymoon tour
across
the country.
Oh my gosh. You guys are on tour. That is so exciting. Yeah. Where all were you touring?
The whole country.
You went all over.
Oh, all yes. over.
I think
Fantastic.
It was 30 states.
Yeah. So. Most of the festival this year was planned from inside of our Subaru Outback.
And you're still getting along.
Yeah.
that's a sign of a strong relationship.
Yeah.
You toured the country together and you're still in love. Yeah. How about that? Let's go really quickly to Stephanie in Fernandina Beach. Go ahead, Stephanie, really fast. Stephanie, go ahead. You're on the air. Oh, Stephanie, you're on the air. Stephanie, go ahead.
Oh.
Go, Stephanie, go.
Hey, yeah, I just had a question. They were recently talking about where the funds are distributed, and I was wondering if the north side of Jacksonville is going to get any attention from this local festival. It's my understanding that there's folks on the north side that don't have access to drinking water here locally, so I was just wondering if any of the funds are going to be going to local people.
Thanks. Thank you for that, Stephanie.
Right, right. We have a lot of friends that are involved in the Florida water crisis as well. The only problem that we've found with, we obviously want to do something about this, but when it comes to the transparency of our event and the ability to give absolutely 100% of the proceeds and the people know exactly where that money's going to go, when it comes to drilling wells, that's so much more transparent. When you're dealing with Florida's water crisis, you have to deal with a lot of attorneys, you have to deal with a lot of red tape, and
a lot of politics.
It's not as transparent when it comes to to our ability.
And we're just musicians putting on a festival. So
yeah. But you know what, Stephanie, calling from Fernandina, I appreciate that. You're right about that.
Absolutely.
And there are incredibly deep and problematic needs right here in Jacksonville. And you are so right about that. And I would encourage anyone listening to lend a hand to any local nonprofit you can right here in Jacksonville, because people are struggling right here all the time. Mm-hmm. I try to help out with a couple of nonprofits in town. So you're absolutely right. In the meantime, please come out and support the Clean Water Music Fest Saturday at the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall. Jordan Jackson and Sean Fisher of Flagship Romance. We have a Studio 5 session of your a recent performance you did here in our building at WJCT.org and on our WJCT Facebook page. So people need to check that out. Have a great time tomorrow, and thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a program. Subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Next on Diane Rehm, a look at the week's top national news stories. That's coming up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.